It's Thursday, 1st of March, and you're listening to the Greencast. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me are Cal.
Good evening.
Hamilton.
All right.
Kayla.
Hello.
Nikki.
Yo.
And Catty.
Good evening.
We've got a full cast tonight, and we're going to be covering several stories, which I noticed they have a general theme of disappointment. Sony have announced that the PlayStation Plus games from 2019 will be PS4 only. Sega have taken down the Yakuza 6 demo through a complete fault of their own. Metal Gear Survive is struggling amid poor reviews, amongst other things. But first, what are you doing for the site? We'll start from Catty this week.
A lot of things. I still need to finish up writing the my top interactive stories. I'm also just downloaded Thief Gold because, as of recording, you can go and buy the new Thief for about £3. We're not sponsored by Square Enix. So I decided I'd do a comparison post between Thief Gold, so it's the original Thief from 98, and then compare it to the new one, because that's not something that should have been done several years ago.
Your finger is on the pulse of what is current and hip.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Nikki.
Do you know what? I actually don't remember. No, I've got a few previews to write up. Still continuing from the hype of PC Game Weekender, so I need to finish writing a hands-on with Biomutant, which you can look forward to in the next couple of days. And I'm sure there's probably a review in there somewhere as well. Otherwise, it's more news, and all the news.
Okay. Kayla, what have you been up to?
Quite a lot, actually. So, got my preview done for Metamorph Dungeon Creatures, and we did a stream yesterday with their community manager, Pascal Heyman, I think was his surname, or Herman. that actually went quite well. We ended up playing that for about 2 hours, and we expected him to sort of disappear after about half an hour, but he stuck with us, which was really nice. Got my preview for Vermintide 2 up as well, literally just a couple of hours ago, so happy got that one going. And I'm still working on my 7 Days Long Gone review. It's a very in-depth game with a lot of mechanics, and it doesn't really tell you anything about any of them, so you kind of just have to experiment. And just trying to get from point A to point B, just something across the map, is a bit of a nightmare, so trying to get any actual progression takes hours, like absolutely hours.
Well, fair enough. If you want to check out that stream, it will be available as a VOD, video on demand, on our Twitch, and in a few days it will be uploaded onto our YouTube channel. We can't upload it too soon after the stream because we are now a Twitch affiliate channel, which is good. Hamilton, what have you been up to?
Well, I missed out last week, unfortunately, because I was looking forward to telling you all about a little game called Dynasty Warriors 9.
But that was last week.
But
tell us. Tell us more about this amazing 10 out of 10 game.
It's fucking awful, mate.
there goes our biggest, sponsorship.
Biggest disappointment of the year.
I mean, if I can... I never really expected it to be very good. As soon as they announced that it was open world, I was very iffy about it, and like, umming and ahhing, and Cal and I had a little discussion about it way back when. And it's sort of, yeah, it's just really bad, and it's just not, it's almost not worth talking about because it's just awful. I said in my review, which is on the site, I can't believe it actually got past quality control, and it's been 5 years since they released, no, six since they released the last full Dynasty Warriors game, if you don't count the expansions. And to come up with that in 6 years is just disgusting. It's a slap in the face to all the fans of the series. It's just terrible, terrible game design. It's lazy, and I think Jim Sterling did a video on it, and he summed it up brilliantly by just saying, you know, to try and shamelessly copy a bandwagon 3 or 4 years too late and still fail so totally is just, like, it's just shameful, to be honest. And they have a long way to go to recover from this. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do to try and support that game. I don't know if they're even going to try and if they're even going to bother. But yeah, they're going to have to do a lot to make up for it if they make a Dynasty Warriors 10 in, I don't know, 2022 or something.
I think the problem, what I've read about it, was like, it was supposedly a new game engine, which was supposed to be like all amazing, designed for open world and all that bollocks. And then when I saw the Jim Sterling, and I was like, oh shit, they really fucked this up. It's kind of like the same feeling I had towards, like, with Burnout. I loved Burnout, and then when Burnout went to open world, I was still, but it still was a good game. It was still a really enjoyable game, Paradise. And I was a bit hopeful with Dynasty Warriors 9, because I was thinking, if it's good, I'll get it on PC. And yeah, then I saw Alex's review, and then I saw the Jim Sterling stuff, and I was like, God damn it, Keo.
It's just so bad. Like, I went back to playing Dynasty Warriors 8 on the PS4, and it's so much better. And it came out in 2013, or 2012 even. It's just a massive disappointment in its entirety. And honestly, when I played it, it boggled my mind. Like, the voice acting is awful. They've replaced all the character models. The open world is completely empty. I mean, I don't know what Koei were thinking when they thought they would rely on Omega Force, which is their development studio that they own, who had up until this point been making the same game about 35 times, and then went, right, now make open world. And this is what happens. But yeah, I'm a sad man.
This is a bit of a trend, though, because I can't for the life remember the title, but the next One Piece game is going, like, open world. And, again, they had a very Dynasty Warrior-esque design to them, and I'm just kind of a bit like, I don't know how I feel about this.
Is that Burning Blood, or was that the previous one?
Say again, sorry?
Is that Burning Blood, or was that the previous one?
The last one I played was Pirate Warriors 3, to be honest with you.
So we may never know. Because I don't care enough to look it up.
It seems like one of those things, like, a lot of the Japanese developers are late to the party when it comes to creating, like, taking their established game series and then making open world. Like, we've had it for years, especially with Grand Theft Auto and all that, and everyone's just sort of copied Grand Theft Auto. And they're, like, jumping on the bandwagon. And you've got Metal Gear Solid 5, which did it pretty well, all considering, but that was all about the gameplay, to be fair. But then other developers, like, obviously Dynasty Warriors 9, and then other titles are moving to a bit of an open world as well, and they're all fucking it up.
It's just know your audience. It's like, none of the things in Dynasty Warriors 9 are things that Dynasty Warriors players want. They don't, they don't want crafting or hunting or, like, item shops halfway across the world or spending 5 minutes riding from one destination to the other. They want to be able to jump into a quick game and kill 1,000 guys in 10 minutes. That's basically what they want to do, with some hammy voice acting and, like, some overdriven guitars in the background for soundtrack. And that's all they want. But I think I just missed what their audience wants, and it's a big shame. But well, still got Dynasty Warriors 8, which is still good.
I feel like developers are kind of forgetting that doing an open world, you've got to fill it. There's got to be things in there to do, and that's actually really quite hard to do. And there's so many out there, like somebody is making these massive, massive open worlds and universes. Hello Games with their, I forgot the name, how can I forget the name? No Man's Sky. You know, it's fantastic. Okay, we've got this entire universe to explore. But if there's nothing in it, what's the point? And I look at games like Elder Scrolls, and Skyrim did it very well. But the actual quest lines, the main quests, but they're not that great when you actually get into it. And more often than not, like a short side quest is actually better. So for me, I'd prefer for some games just to sit and actually make a little bit more linear content that's really good, as opposed to not having quite a polished game for the sake of an open world, just for an open world and no other reason.
It is a lot like that. I mean, if pre-established series is like Grand Theft Auto and even Assassin's Creed and things like that, they're pre-established worlds and they just get bigger and bigger and bigger. They're all, like, especially Assassin's Creed, that was kind of semi-open world. It wasn't a massive map, but it was, you still had a lot of exploration you could do. And then when you get to, and then Origins is just fucking huge. And there's a shitload of, but when you take a pre-existing series that's always been sort of linear or quite closed, or semi-linear in that sense, like Dynasty Warriors, where you can pick the scenarios you want to do and all that, and then they just take that and just stick it in an open world. It's as you say, you need filler, you need things to do in it, as opposed to
it's interesting as well, because
lazy shit.
You mentioned Metal Gear Solid 5 as well, and that's quite an interesting one, because that had the problem where, you know, they had a fantastic, you know, quite robust, fantastic gameplay system, but again, the world felt quite empty except for a few locations. But the limitation there was actually because they were forced to support PS3 and Xbox 360. So the issue they had was that they, from a resource point of view, couldn't fill that world, which is why you had those 10 minutes of riding your horse around. And again, it's one of those things of like, well, if you couldn't have done it because of the resources, then why have just done it? You know, you should have just said, okay, well, we can't hit what we want to deliver, so we might as well just not do it.
I can see what you mean. Yeah, they were kind of restricted because they had to support the previous consoles, but they kind of designed the Fox engine to be, you know, designed for open worldness. Well, Fox engine's just great in general, and then fucking Konami just. We'll get to Konami shortly, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll get to Konami. and their esoteric decisions.
Yeah, they haven't really survived the charts.
But Cal, what have you been up to this past week?
Well, I've sort of been playing catch-up, really. I was saying last week I was bitching about Battalion 1944. I've sort of almost finished up with my preview. In my anger, I've now removed the game because it's not been patched in the last couple of weeks. And I went back to it because they did they've done the competitive mode now, which is so pointless considering that the game's still broken. Matchmaking issues, and the community is very much slowly dying out. So I've removed it. And other than that, I've been playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Origins, to be honest with you. I actually really like that game. But yeah, other than that.
That's a real shame about Battalion. I remember playing it sort of around this time last year at Rezzed. They were just showing it off for the first time. And it felt like a very early version of the game. But it felt like there was a lot of good stuff there, but it doesn't sound like they've really done anything since then.
No, the gameplay is really good, very old school, very much like Call of Duty 1 and Call of Duty 2, but then everything else around it and sort of built from there is like CSGO. They've kind of like, well, we've got the game nailed, but everything else, it's just dribs and drabs. And even the net code and the matchmaking is still botched. So I'm like, can't be arsed with this now.
So a glowing preview to look forward to.
Yeah.
Myself, I streamed a bit of Heat Signature last week. I was hoping to stream some more, something tomorrow, but because of the snow, all four of the kids are going to be at home, so no stream from me. And I wrote a couple of So I Trieds for Forts and Bohemian Killing. And been playing a bit of Planetoid Pioneers, well, quite a bit of Planetoid Pioneers, trying to get the review done. When I did the preview, the single player content was quite large, but still only a few hours. They've definitely expanded the scope of it, added completely new areas and redone others. But at least I've finally got a grappling hook, so that's me happy.
Out of interest, did you go back to Bohemian Killing at all?
I have not gone back to it since I wrote this, so I tried no.
Because I wrote the review for it about a year ago, and I didn't think much of it, if I remember rightly. I think I gave it like a 5?
Yeah, when it came in, I thought, ooh, I quite fancy that, and then your review wasn't too glowing, so I waited until it was dirt cheap during a sale, and eventually, well, I say eventually, and have just gotten around to trying it out. Certainly an interesting game, and since I bought it so long ago, hopefully it's worth my money. However much I paid for it. Speaking of paying for things, Sony have announced, when they announced their PlayStation Plus games for March, they also announced that starting from March next year, they will stop giving free PS3 and Vita games.
Can I just say, straight off the bat, well played, Sony, because they've done this in a fantastic way, because they've announced, hey, here's the games for March, and for PS4, you get Bloodborne, you get the Ratchet and Clank remake. You know, those are two very big titles, and people are like, yes, finally, some good titles in the PlayStation Plus lineup. And then you read a little bit more, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna get rid of some games next year. And it's like, you bastards!
Yeah, the thing is, they can't even say, oh, but the quality's going to go up. Well, then why is the quality right now so good? After months and months of utter tot.
The problem is like, fair enough, you know, the PS3 is legacy hardware, they've stopped manufacturing. The Vita pretty much only really exists in Japan at the minute, although I still love mine. And by all means, you know, a year from now, drop those from the lineup. That's fine. But I think the problem is that they recently put the price up, and some sources claim that we're only going to get 2 PS4 games from next year. So it's kind of like, why are we paying more?
Yeah, that's exactly why I dropped it. And in the past 6 months, they've had 3 different offers to try and get people back in. They've had 2 instances of buy 12 months, get 15 months. And up until a couple of weeks ago, they were giving away Far Cry 4 if you got a year's worth. So it certainly sounds like they're eager to get more people, because they've lost a ton of people. Because the
it's a bit of a strange way to go around about it, though.
I'm also interested in because currently it's all well and good saying that there's 2 PS4 games, 2 PS3 games, 2 PS Vita games, but actually there's 5 PS4 games. Only one of those games isn't currently crossplay. So there's 2 things on there. One, if they do reduce it down to 2, then sort of everyone loses. And secondly, they can't even say that people aren't developing for those platforms, because people still do release crossplay games, not so much with the PS3, but definitely with the Vita. A lot of indies still do put their stuff out on Vita.
The latest Digimon was also crossplay, I believe. Well, you had to buy it on Vita, but still, you can transfer your save. And it's weird that Legend of K Anniversary is the PlayStation 3 version when it's also available on PlayStation 4.
That one must just not be crossplay. or whatever PlayStation call their buy it once thing.
Whatever their criteria are for crossplay.
An interesting thing, though, with PlayStation Plus, at least back when it first started and they got developers to put their games on the service, they originally said to the developers, we will give you X amount of money up front to cover the downloads. And early on, a lot of developers were quite angry because they found that, well, actually, the number of downloads that you took doesn't equate to the amount you gave us, so we lost sales essentially. And they changed the way it worked over the years, but I do wonder if maybe part of the change is also to do with that business model, and maybe if maybe the demand or something is changed and people just don't want to put their games on there because they still feel like they might be losing money, so maybe they are just struggling to find titles for the Vita and the PS3 at this point.
It might be in relation to the amount of subscriptions that have gone down. They've seen that we've lost this many subscriptions due to after the price rise in the last financial year, so looking forward to the next financial year, we're going to cut it down to make up for the loss of subscribers.
I also wonder if we'll see any movement from both from both Sony and Microsoft when the Switch's online service launches, because in September, unless they move it again, just because it could be interesting to see what Nintendo actually do with their service, sort of what price point they put it at and what they actually include with it.
And if they're still planning on letting you rent a game for a month.
Yeah, there's definitely some problems with what they've proposed, but they've delayed it because it was originally supposed to come out a few months after, like September last year, I think. But now it's September this year. So we'll see what they've come up with in that time.
Well, we can wait and see. But speaking of companies giving things away for free, Sega were forced to remove their Yakuza 6 demo because it was actually the full game.
I find this absolutely hilarious.
Yes.
Well, I can just imagine someone in the office is sat there and realised their mistake and just kind of have been in the fetal position ever since.
Well, they were probably shot.
It's interesting to think about how they noticed. Did people start tweeting about it and then they realized, or did they how long was it up and available for?
And the people that downloaded it, do they still have access, or if people found out and they just sort of stay offline, would they still be able to access it?
I think they have a way they're doing that. I think they have a way. It's like the PT demo. They have a way of stopping you from playing it, I think.
Yeah, I'd imagine that they'd force a patch to remove access. So if you downloaded it and then took your PS4 offline, then you'll still be able to play it.
Hmm.
They tweeted about the demo being live 9:35 Tuesday, the 27th, Tuesday, and their tweet to say they've removed it was at 3:31 later that day, so it was up for 6 hours, give or take.
That's a lot of time for people to get through a game.
There's got to be hundreds of people who still have it.
To be fair, though, on PlayStation, the size of Yakuza 6 probably would take them about 6 hours to download it.
32 gig file download, I believe.
Ooh.
People were saying on Twitter, why is the demo this big? Little did they know.
Now they know.
You would have thought that would have been a red flag immediately for them to realise that, hold on a minute, why is this demo this big? Maybe we should probably have a look at it and see what's going on.
Because of the way they did it, it essentially was just a gate So you download the whole game, and then there would just be a trigger at one point that's like, oh, thanks for playing the demo. But again, that's kind of like a bad move on their part. It's like you could have just spent the extra bit of dev time branching off in having two branches and saying, this smaller section is now the demo. Let's just make that work. But didn't this happen with another game where, like, instead of releasing the actual game, they released the demo? I know Dead Island had the problem where they released the fucking beta version.
I don't recall, and it sounds like nobody else does. Is anyone Googling that? Now everyone's Googling that.
Yeah,
everyone's Googling that. I'll wait, it's fine.
Seriously, if you're Googling that, I'll wait. If not.
I remember there was a demo disc that released, I think it was on the PS2, that had a full version of a game, but I don't remember what the game was. If that helps anyone remember.
Okay, well, we'll move on from...
Yeah, I'm not finding anything.
From that, the ESRB the Entertainment Software Rating Board for America has announced that it's going to bring out a label warning about in-game purchases.
And nothing changed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Well, it's what people have been asking for generally. People have been saying recently, oh, put on a gambling warning. This is kind of that. It just says...
It's still in the air though as well, is it? If loot boxes are gambling, some countries are sort of saying yes and others are saying no.
You've got to change the definition of gambling otherwise. Because when you pay for a loot box, you definitely get something, whereas gambling is the chance that you might not get anything. So you're not actually gambling, under the strictest definition of the term anyway. Which is the problem lawmakers are coming up against. Because people are still paying for things, they're not paying for a chance to get something, technically.
Yeah, like those machines you put a pound in and get a ball of something out of, gacha machines.
Because the way it's set up currently, this new label, isn't it for anything, including like future DLC? So that means pretty much every single game is going to have this label anyway. So it's not really doing anything.
I mean, the ESRB itself is owned by the ESA, which was formed by all of the major publishers anyway. So this is them trying to trick everyone into thinking they've solved
the
problem.
So it's a smokescreen to make it look like they're doing something, and in actual fact, they're not.
Yeah. This just goes back to everyone asking the ESA to fix this problem. The ESA has a vested interest in making the company's money because they're owned by it.
But the ESRB are also launching a new website, parentaltools.org, to help raise awareness of the helpful tools that parents can use to manage the amount of time or money those crafty kids spend playing games.
Well, here's an idea. And, you know, as you know, I don't have kids, so maybe I'm misinformed here, but maybe just don't give them, leave your credit card details logged in when you give them access, or give them a user account that doesn't have access to it. You know, there are, I mean, you know, just to be devil's advocate here, there are parental settings and things, so. But, yeah, this rating is kind of stupid. In fact, I think it was you, Kayla, that said it's more of a leap forwards than a step forwards. They've just gone, everything is now...
Yeah, but unfortunately, they have to label it as everything, because as we said, they can't label loot boxes as gambling. So it's almost like there needs to be a new classification for loot boxes if they're not willing to say loot boxes are gambling. Loot boxes have to be something else, because otherwise the loot boxes do currently fall under the same kind of area as what, you know, DLC does as well. So I think that's where the issue is, and that's all they can really do right now.
This also, I've just noticed how really little this means, because there's two sections on the ESRB website for descriptors. There's content descriptors and then interactive elements. So content descriptors are your sexual themes, your nudity, your language, that kind of thing. Interactive elements are just, and that's where in-game purchases come under, is just this game is multiplayer or this game shares your location. It's not even really actually a label.
Well, from stepping forward slightly to time travel, Chrono Trigger has been released on Steam. This is the first PC release of this SNES title. And apparently it's a mobile port.
Yeah, they kind of balls it up a bit.
Yeah.
It's just laziness, isn't it? It's just, let's make a bit of money and not really bother actually polishing off content that we throw up there.
I think
especially...
You go.
I was just going to say, it's especially lazy considering I could go and play the original. If I was to somehow stumble upon a Chrono Trigger ROM, which are available everywhere, I could play the original game without any of the mobile enhancements, which made the game hard to control, according to a review I read. So they literally could have just, and Sega do this with all their stuff. A lot of their games are just the original ROMs. They've just wrapped into a emulator. There's no reason Square couldn't have done this with Chrono Trigger.
But it's interesting you mentioned about Sega as well, because that was what I was going to point out, is Sega, they have Sega Forever thing now, where obviously I think it's every couple of weeks they add another title onto mobile. But as someone, as quite a few people pointed out when they did that, and they put the Sonic games back on in the Sega Forever branding, they were like, yeah, they've literally just wrapped these emulated versions in a Unity skin, like, and now it runs like crap. And you look at the release of Chrono Trigger and you compare it to the original and like even the mobile version, and it's like, this just, what have you done to this? This just looks so bad. And I would have hoped that Square Enix, of all people, might have maybe put a little bit of thought into it, but no.
Apparently the DS version is much better than what hit iOS and Android. And one of the theories I've read is that there's just not a lot of money put in by the companies into remakes, so they did it as cheaply as possible.
Aren't they completely remaking Final Fantasy VII?
But I think that's a good point there, because, you know, what we've seen of the 7 remake and that, you know, the quality there compared to the mobile version, it's kind of ironic, really, because it's like, Chrono Trigger is easily one of their most beloved games. Had they put, you know, a bit of time into this port and said, you know, here's updated textures, yada yada, you know, it's got the full screen support, it runs nicely, have fun, it would have sold, it would have sold like mad, you know. But instead, they just half-assed it, and they basically dampened their reputation again. Because they did this when they released Final Fantasy VII on the PS4, I think it was. That was a straight port of the PC version, and that ran like crap as well.
But didn't Final Fantasy XII that you were talking about a while ago, Ace, and it not being very good?
I'm sorry?
Final Fantasy XII not being very good, and it's, was it remake, remaster?
Final Fantasy VII was remastered with added bits in for PC, PlayStation 4, and was it Xbox? Can't remember. But apparently, well, according to our review, that's quite an accomplished remake. So they are capable of creating good remakes. This just isn't a remake, it's just a port.
I think ultimately it's just sad, really, because it is a title that many people love. It's a title that I've not played, and I play it. PC release is a fantastic chance to do that. But if it's this terrible, that it's like, well, why should I bother, you know?
And it's the second big RPG that's released in the last couple of weeks that has sort of disappointed on PC. With the Secret of Mana, the one that came out last week, I think.
Oh, yeah, that was a complete remake, wasn't it?
Yeah, but people have been complaining that it's sort of washed out. It doesn't look anywhere near as good as the original, which came out 20 years before. And I've looked at the screenshots, and I kind of agree. The game just looks washed out in comparison to the original pixel art.
It does feel like just very much these companies have just seen it as an easy way to make a bit of extra money, and by putting in very, very little effort.
Well, you can't always put all of your effort into each and every game. Just ask Konami. Metal Gear Survive has had disappointing first week, opening week charts in the UK, entering at 6th place according to Chart Track.
Game everyone was looking forward to.
Yes, everyone.
Everybody.
Funny enough, I had the chance to play this when I was at Gamescom, and I was like, yeah, when the first trailer came out, I was like, oh, what are you doing? And then I played it, and I liked the kind of the cooperative side of things, but what made me laugh was the fact that the console, they were kind of beefing up saying, oh, this is on the Xbox X. So it's before the Xbox X was out. And say, like, oh, you were playing on the Xbox X, 4K. And I was like, yeah, it looks good. It looks all right. It looks basically, it looks exactly like Metal Gear Solid 5, to be fair. But the version I played crashed on me. The whole console crashed and conked out. And I was like, ah, it's quite ironic. It's quite amusing. But I never expected this game to be any success.
It's funny as well, because the beta they did, like, I jumped into that, and I'm a diehard Metal Gear fan. Again, like, you detach it from Metal Gear, or you think of it as a DLC, and it's like, it's all right. Like, there's some all right mechanics here. Like, I'm okay with I'm okay with it, you know. But it's at the same time, it's like, this doesn't need to exist, and it's kind of a bit mediocre. You know, the second you make a survival game, it's like, well, I can go and find thousands of these everywhere. So, you know,
it's just the classic way of making extra money on something to, oh, we'll just use assets that already exist from something else, slap a name on it that people already know, and no matter what, it will sell, and it will sell to people that are a little less informed about what the actual game is. They'll just think, oh, Metal Gear, oh yeah, I heard that these games are good, let's buy it.
The funny thing is, it sort of goes back to what you said, Nikki. If they'd have just released this as like a DLC, or an expansion to Metal Gear Solid 5 and priced it appropriately, they probably would not have struggled so much. But they're selling it for £35, and people are saying Ark is had more content at launch.
And they probably
Sorry, go on. I was just saying that this is also they did sell the prologue to Metal Gear Solid 5 for like £20. To be honest, that was just a glorified demo.
That came down in price frighteningly fast, like Battleborn speeds.
It's interesting as well, because you, like, I know I keep starting all my sentences with "it's interesting as well," but anyway,
that's interesting.
It is interesting because I think the thing about me is like that there's this stupid story mode in there, and there's all this nonsense and. You know, there's all the pre-order bonuses and all this crap, but like, let's just jump back a bit. You know, Metal Gear Online, that released alongside Metal Gear Solid 5, you know, it wasn't great, but it was alright. Konami closed that studio after like a couple of weeks of the game being out. That's pretty much dead. And it's like, wait, so now you've made another online game with all the same pre-order bonuses, with all the same assets. It's like, what, a month, 2 months until you close that company and then just let this one die as well? Like, why? What was the point? Like, again, it's fun. It's a bit mediocre from playing the beta and stuff, but, like, what was the point?
To make money, I guess.
I am just a butthurt fanboy. That's not the point.
Well, like, but go back a bit to if they had released it as, like, a DLC for Metal Gear 5, is that right? It wouldn't have looked so out of place, because essentially it's a zombie mode, it's a horde mode, and that's not uncommon in so many big titles right now. You know, we've got Rainbow Six coming out with its own zombie-esque sort of thing as well, so I think they would have got a lot less heat from the fans if they had done it like that.
Well, review outlets haven't been favourable. Admittedly, we appear to have been ignored. They don't want to send us a copy to review,
which makes me sad.
The Metacritic has the Xbox One aggregate score at the highest as 65 out of 100, and the PC as 56. Meanwhile, OpenCritic saying that the cross-platform total aggregate is 62 out of 100.
I think it might be the lowest rated Metal Gear Solid title as well.
And there was some bad ones. If I'm not mistaken.
There were some bad ones, yeah. But
there's
not...
nothing wrong with Metal Gear Acid.
No, Metal Gear Acid's great. I'm talking about Portable Ops, which was a bit right, but Peace Walker was far superior, you know.
I want to take a look, let's just see. Because usually the Metal Gear titles are the lowest rated ones are the ones that has no involvement from Kojima. Like the spin-off titles.
Are you saying there's a connection?
Yeah. Portable Ops has 87 on Metacritic. Whereas Peace Walker has an 89.
Whoop, whoop.
So you're right. The 2% difference.
Look,
it was inferior.
Makes all the difference because, you know, Peace Walker, you know, basically just having Hideo Kojima there makes the difference, all right? That's what I'm saying. Hideo, I love you.
Yeah, it is the lowest rated Metal Gear Solid title. Even Metal Gear Snake Eater for the 3DS got a 78. And that, I heard, was really bad.
Yeah.
Like, not in general, but, like, performance-wise.
Yeah, that was a really, really
Acid
bad.
Got a 75. Sorry.
I was just saying that the 3DS port of 3 was a really bad port, although there was a fun thing where you could use the 3DS's camera to make your own camouflage. If you took a picture of Kojima's face, you got 100% camouflage.
That's awesome.
Metal Gear Solid Portable Ops Plus on the PSP got a 65. Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes on the PS3, 66. These are on Metacritic. Metal Gear Online, 72.
See, it sounds like it's not,
most of the criticism.
Not the worst. It just sounds meh. It's all just very, very sort of average.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the other games, like Metal Gear Solid 5... Ground Zeroes, 75, but that would probably be people bitching about the price upon its release because on PS4. Metal Gear Acid bitched because it was turn-based card game. Not a lot of people liked.
Oh, it was awful.
Metal Gear Solid 2 Substance for the PC got 77. Again, that would probably be because it's a PC port. And again, Snake Eater for the 3DS performance.
Question.
And the digital graphic novel.
Question, because you've got it up in front of you and I can't be bothered to Google it. Is the remake of the first game on the GameCube, Metal Gear Solid The Twin Snakes, I think it's called, what Metacritic score has that got?
I'd assume high.
It's not on page 2. Twin Snakes got an 85.
Oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry.
Did you not
like
this?
No, I'm sorry. That is like... Okay, so for anyone who doesn't know, the Metal Gear Solid 1 was a PS1 game. It was great, fantastic. They remade it for the GameCube for some strange reason, but for whatever reason, they decided to change all the dialogue, change the voice cast, and for some reason make the animations and the cutscenes more action-orientated. Like, for example, there's...
Oh, I hated the cutscenes.
Yeah, there's a bit where, like, Snake's, like, he's, you know, he's peering around a door, listening to a conversation. And in the first game, he peers around, he's like, okay, and then he just sort of quickly steps across the doorway and looks through. In the Twin Snakes, they make him do a standing somersault side flip over the door.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, there's loads of bits like, it was 2004, so yeah, it was roughly about the time where everyone was loving like Matrix shit.
Yeah.
So it had loads of cutscenes with loads of slow-mo and bullet time, and it's like,
However, it does give us the fantastic moment of when, you know, Snake, spoilers, finally gets captured on the first game, and they hit him in the back of the head to knock him out, and he just turns around and looks at the guy, and he's like, you what? And then starts walking towards the deck cube, and then just collapses. Like, that was brilliant in 3D, but yeah.
Sorry, I'd just like to correct something you said. You said it was different voice actors. It was the original cast.
Oh, was it? My apologies.
They re-recorded.
I know in the original Metal Gear Solid, like, in the original version, a lot of the voice actors used pseudonyms. Because they were like, this might fuck up our careers. and then preceded further releases would use their actual names.
Yeah. I think it was David Hayter was the only one who didn't use a pseudonym in the first game.
Yeah.
Metal Gear.
So is Keith Sutherland one of his pseudonyms?
Steady there.
God, they spent all that money on
lines of dialogue.
Yeah, they spent all that money on him, and then it's just like barely talks.
Yeah.
And then people saying he speaks more on the cassettes, so I listen to all the cassettes, and it's just like no, it's like
not that much.
He says maybe Kaz, maybe a couple of times, and that's about it. For fuck's sake.
Quiet has more lines than Keith Sunderland, and that says a lot. Her name is Quiet. So,
while you were all looking at Metacritic, I went to look at something significantly more boring. I wondered how much of the original team who made Metal Gear Solid 5 actually still remained to work on Survive. Polygon, of all people, did a credits rundown, and they estimate about 25% of the original Phantom Pain team returned to work on Survive. So it's difficult for them to tell how much of that is just people being recredited for things they already made in Phantom Pain.
Yeah, because there's a lot of reused assets. I mean, even the map is basically a redo of Afghanistan. Anyway.
Well, there's interesting things like Kiefer Sutherland is actually credited in Survive for his voice and facial capture, even though I think he's only in it for literally about 2 seconds in a cutscene at the start.
Cut scene at the start.
Gotta get that paycheck.
I mean, the thing is, though, like as soon as Metal Gear Solid 5 came out, the lead design, well, the guy, the lead programmer for the Fox Engine, like the second Kojima was like, I've made my own company, the guy was like, yeah, I joined it like the day after we released the game.
So nobody here has played Survive except for at Gamescom. I wonder if Hideo Kojima's name is in it quite as much. Hideo Kojima presents a Hideo Kojima production.
Well, there was the theory that the reason he did that is because Konami were taking away his credits on like box art and things. Mm-hmm. So he put so many credits in so they couldn't remove not only his name but all of the people who'd worked on the game. That's why there's credits every like 20 minutes like in Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah, at the start of every single mission it just says like...
And the end,
yeah. And that, it just says... Like it doesn't just say Hideo Kojima. He does. The other guys are credited as well, like scenario director or someone like that. But
I'd
yeah,
say that is a wonderful
Russian Soldier 4.
That is a wonderful middle finger, if that is the case.
Starring such and such.
I weirdly like the credit. I don't know because it was so out there. I quite enjoyed it.
I mean,
having intro and outro credits to every
mission. It was good, apart from when you're going into a mission and it's like, this mission stars so-and-so, and you're like, oh, well, that just spoiled the story for this mission.
Yeah, it did on a couple, especially with those things that hunt you down when they spot you. I was just like, oh, god damn it, they're in this mission.
Oh,
the ghosts.
The ghosts.
I forget what they're called. It's the Skulls Unit?
Oh, Skulls, that's it. Skulls Unit, that's it.
Which end up being just QTE mini boss fights, and they were kind of a bit meh. Mm. Although you could easily cheese them by just getting on the horse and riding away.
Yeah, pretty much.
I think that's how I managed to speedrun most of the missions.
Then they chased you.
No.
They did chase you, but they eventually gave up.
Yes. There was every sort of mission and every trigger had a boundary. So basically, like, if you just got to the edge of the trigger, everything just reset. And then they wouldn't respawn either, so you could go back if you needed to. I put a lot of time into this game, I'm sorry.
Yes, you should apologize for liking a game.
How dare you? We're journalists. We're not allowed to like games.
Well, I mean, maybe that's why they won't send us a review code.
Well, from games we like to Activision. Tony Hawk has announced via Twitter that he is no longer working with Activision. because people keep asking him to remaster the old games or complaining that the Tony Hawk Pro Skater servers are down. But he lays the blame quite fairly at Activision's feet. Activision owns the Tony Hawk Pro Skater license, but I am no longer working with them. So, does this mean that we can expect no more remasters? No remasters?
He even said, like, if I could program and develop my own game, I would. But if he did, he'd probably do a far better job than the last Tony Hawk's game.
As I say, does anyone want another Tony Hawk's game? I mean, a good one, but the way the rest of them have been, it's just not... It just doesn't...
They were of a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think people want a skate game as well, a new skate game.
Just buy a skateboard.
Skate Royale?
It's easier than skate.
Skate Battleground Royale?
Yeah, but that's like saying, like, someone who loves first-person shooters, just buy a gun.
To be fair, in the UK, it's quite hard to buy a gun.
It is.
It's a lot easier to buy a skateboard.
See, I used to buy the Hawks games just for the soundtracks, and I don't really think that the bands that were making music back when I was still buying Tony Hawk's games are still going, so I dread to think what the soundtracks would be these days.
Those darn kids and their rap music.
It always upsets me, like, when you listen to old bands from those types of games, and they're all like indie or like grunge or punk, and they would have been in their like 20s, maybe early 30s back in the day. Or even maybe younger, but then you look at them now and they're like 40s, maybe 50s, and they're still trying to do punk music, and you're like, oh, that's sad. That makes me feel really old. I just like, because Geezer from, the ones who did Sum 41, the lead singer from that.
Oh god, they look so old.
They look well rough.
Like, they look like they've been out in the sun for too long. You know when you like leave a potato in the cupboard and then it grows all those weird arms and legs? That's what Sum 41 look like now.
Yeah. Arms and legs?
Because they're in too deep.
God, please.
So, I just posted a link to the Pro Skater 5 soundtrack list, and it does look mostly like bands that I've never heard of before. There's a band called the Schizophrenics with a song called Rat Trap.
Oh my god, Yogi and Skrillex. Didn't I just say Skrillex?
I know some of those.
I love that there's literally a band just called Death.
Ace, there's a song from that game you like, The Orwell, Who Needs You?
The sequel of which came out just this past week.
Can't wait for it to be on the Game of the Year list.
Yeah, probably will be.
I like that, the Schizophrenics.
Right, minutes ago, Catty also posted in some late-breaking news before we wrap up. Battlefield 2018, reportedly set in World War II, called Battlefield 5. Oh, sorry, Battlefield V.
Yeah, so it seems that whenever it gets to the fifth entry, they always have to use the Roman numeral.
The V stands for victory.
Yeah, actually, that... Oh, I hope it is as well, that's good, that's clever.
It won't be because it's far too obvious and EA won't come up with it.
But that's just more confusing because Battlefield 1 obviously won World War 1. Battlefield V-Day, Victory. Okay, yeah, I get that, World War 2. But what's the chronological order to these games now? I'm so confused.
I wonder if it's to make it look like it's a bit fresher, so it's not just like, oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's like, when you've got more sort of in a line, like they look like fresher titles. Does that make any sense?
Battlefield 1 did kind of throw it completely off, because they started off with 1942, then did Battlefield, loads of different expansions on top of that, like a Vietnam one. Then they went to 2, then they went to 3. There was a 1943, but there was also, there was a 2142 as well.
So it goes Battlefield 1942, then Battlefield Vietnam, then Battlefield 2, Then Battlefield 2142.
Yeah.
Then Bad Best Company. One. Then Heroes. Then 1943. Then Bad Company 2. Then the really awful online-only ones that no one played. Then Battlefield 3, Battlefield 4, Battlefield Hardline, which everyone gets, was a thing. And then Battlefield 1, and now Battlefield 5.
Hardline was great.
I bet that they refer to it as Battlefield V.
I didn't realize there was many.
Their argument with Battlefield 1 was that because they were going back to the first modern war, so they were Battlefield 1.
Now they're going to the first
the fifth modern war. Yeah, who knows?
There was an Xbox 360 one as well. I think it was like Modern Combat. Am I right?
Wasn't that an expansion to 2? Oh no, Modern Combat was the console version of Battlefield 2.
It was, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, no, I remember.
When am I getting Bad Company 3?
Probably never now.
Yeah, when am I getting 2140?
Yeah, they won't do
when
sci-fi.
Can I have a good first-person shooter?
Battlefield 2142 was incredible.
I enjoyed that. Mother Base mode, I can't remember what it was called now.
Yeah!
That was awesome.
It was so good.
And with that, we've reached the end of the show. Thank you for joining me, Cal, Hamilton, Kayla, Nikki, and Katty. From next week, we'll be recording on a different day, either Tuesday or Wednesday. We've still got to narrow that down, I think. We had a bit of a discussion before we started recording, but I want to have a definite consensus before we decide. So expect the podcast to go live on a different day next week. Keep refreshing your RSS feeds, folks. Or your iTunes, or your Stitcher, however you tune into the show. If you want to talk to us on Twitter, you can reach us at Grincast. You can talk to our main site, GameGrin, at GameGrin. Or find us on Facebook, or just go to our main site, www.gamegrin.com. Make sure to tune into our Twitch channel from 8 PM GMT every day for our streams. And while you're at it, game on.